Hello, everybody. It's Thursday, January 19th, 2017. Thursday, January 19th, and this is our COS meeting. And in progress, we're discussing things that pertain to the COS and the nation at large. And we just had a meeting about the jury questionnaire. And in a large part, that's going to be work of the Committee of Safeties and the Common Law Grand Jury. It all ties in. So those are things that we have to start thinking about. And I think we're going to have to start thinking about them a lot quicker than people realize, because it certainly seems that we're going to get some cooperation from the top. And so we're on the bottom, and it's our duty to be ready when that top comes in. That way we can be directing things in our communities, because this is a grassroots things, and that's where we want to start, in our communities. That's where all politics starts, on a local level. And look, if we're going to control things, it's easier to do it at home. You know what I mean? You can't, you know, I mean, yeah, I know we're fighting in the federal court, but that translates, the support comes down into the counties. You know, if the federal government wasn't supported, if people watched the government from the county level, they would have no foot to stand on. They wouldn't be able to do half of the abuses that they do if we didn't allow it in our counties, because it all goes downhill. So anyway, that's my spiel. I'm not gonna get on a soapbox here. Anybody has anything pertinent for the COS tonight? I mean, it's amazing how all this stuff ties together. You know, even if you think it doesn't, it all gets back to this fight, this push, this rising up that we're doing, and this awakening. So it's important to be prepared. And I think I've said it before, I have a fear of success, because I think it's going to come quicker than we realize. And I know we're not ready. I know that, you know, we need a whole lot of work to do. Although, I do think that a lot of people are still shell shocked. They don't believe it's going to happen, and they're kind of like the deer in the headlights, and they're still not believing it. And so that's another part of the problem. We have to got to believe it. You got to get moving, because I think we have a period of time here to become prepared. And if we don't, then we're going to be like the foolish versions. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know how long this is going to last or how far it's going to go, but I'm going to take every opportunity in the meantime to prepare to set that infrastructure in, so that if hard times come, if monetary collapse comes, which I don't know how they're going to prevent it, but maybe they will, the grace of God. You know, I mean, we have Donald Trump at the national helm, and he's kind of a, you know, multi-billionaire kind of businessman, and that's probably a good thing in a certain sense, because he can handle that stuff on the top. And I mean, as far as where we come in is, we gotta send the message up there and make it perfectly clear that, look, money is gold and silver and whatever else we barter and say it is. You know, if they want to do money, we need to get back to real money. We got to get out of the promise to pay note. That's what's killing us. And of course, that's a thing that, you know, will get Donald Trump killed. But guess what? It won't if we're behind him. So, you know, times get tough. We spoke about being able to, you know, local communities and governors especially can charter banks in their state. And they could bring the gold and silver in, and we could do barter. I mean, there's all kinds of alternative money, Bitcoin and other things that people use that they should recognize as money. You know, and that's another battle we're going to have as a COS. But I think, other than not a battle, but look at, if we start trading amongst ourselves real money, and bartering and commodities on the local level, that's going to help on a national level. we should start right now. This is one of the things we should be doing in our COSs. We should be talking about dealing in real money amongst ourselves. Look, there's church groups out there and like, you know, and Amish people that cooperate with each other, and that's what they do. They support each other in business. They all you know, frequent each other's trades and arts, and they all use each other. And the answer to America is the small community. You know, it's and I mean that doesn't preclude the cities, because every city has small communities. You have blocks in the city where certain ethnic groups end up coming together. And that, look at years ago, that's the way it was. It was the medieval day, but each block had its own thing, and each one could be its own autonomous system, and then they could trade amongst each other, whatever they're going to do. And believe me, if we reinstitute, you know, a free economy, an unfettered economy, we would have no trouble trading with the city and feeding the cities and having small farms around the cities to support them, instead of all this multinational stuff that we got now. I live in Apple Country, USA, and I go to the store and I buy a can of apple juice and it says, made in Sri Lanka. What the heck's up with that? We got all the apples in the world right here, and I got to buy Sri Lankan apple juice, which I don't know if that stuff is good or not, but I certainly feel better with good old Hudson Valley apples that grow right here. So that's the point I'm making. We need to get local. And we need to, you know, and you start out, hey, it's politics, some of it, a lot of it. It is what it is. You know, a sheriff is a political animal because he's elected by the people. But that's a good thing because he's law enforcement, but yet he answers to the people. So he's not going to know anything if you never get out and talk to him. That's what we should be doing. I mean, I remember in the beginning we were afraid to talk to the sheriff. People didn't want to, can we go? Can we? Now we got so much material that all you got to do is download and take with you. You know, we got PowerPoints, that whole PowerPoint video, that thing that Ron is working on for first responders and hunters. That's a great one, and especially in the small communities that have volunteer fire departments and things like that, and volunteer paramedic and ambulance, because they're doing it now. You just have to make them aware of the Constitution, the militia clauses. I'm telling you right now, most of us here live in these small communities. I don't know how many of us live like in the city, but outside of the city in the suburbs, they're just about all volunteer ambulance and fire, and those guys, they are almost an organized militia already. They have a chain of command. They have an infrastructure. They have resources. And that's where it's going to go. So, I mean, you know, it's not a bad idea to join your local fire department. I joined mine. I just turned a life member this year. I don't have to pay dues anymore. Yay. But that gave me an insight to who the people were, and, you know, put me in touch with my local officials. You know, you get called as a volunteer fireman, you get called for rescue, you get called for everything. It's not just fires, it's car accidents, and it's basement pumps out. I know people, kitties in trees, we don't get that. That's, you know, but you know what I mean. But that puts you out there, and you get to rub elbows with the police and other officials, and it gives you a name and a face, and it gives you a certain amount of clout and authority. And that's what we want. That's what we've lost today in our communities. We've lost the camaraderie, the ability to talk to each other. And so if you become active in these things, in your committees of safety and in your towns, and look at, they all got this disaster trading, this NIMS that the federal government is waving money, a carrot on a stick. Oh, you have to do this, you have to do that. Guess what? Get your fingers in it, because you can control it. You can, once you're in there, it's up to the local people. And they, you know, they funnel all this money from wherever it's coming from, and I mean, they're giving it right now. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with it, because what happens is the federal government always has strings attached. So, you know, one of the things, the problems I have with their NIMS training, which actually, it was very good, most of it was very good, but at some point they have you signing off your authority to the federal people coming in. So that's the part I didn't like, and that's why if you're there, if you're active, if you're in, if you're on your safety committee in your town and all that stuff, you have a voice and you can prevent that. I mean, my sheriff in this county took $0 from the federal government, zero, because of our efforts, and we educated him and told him we didn't want the federal government yanking his chain in an emergency, and he's held to that. And I'm kind of sorry we did that, because now I'm thinking, like, Obama had second thoughts after the people started complaining. There was an incident, and everybody said, yeah, Boston, I think, oh, the police look like military, you know, they got all this stuff, and they got tanks and all this stuff, and this and that. And, of course, the sheriff movement was coming up, and you had that one sheriff, they told him, he said he wouldn't let any feds in, and they said, if you don't let us in, we're going to come arrest you with our SWAT team. He said, that's okay, I got mine, too, and he had the MRAP and the tank, and I don't know what else he had that he got from the federal government. And Obama's like, we got to sit back and think about giving arming these sheriffs like this, you know. So he made a mistake. Look at, you know, it's good to arm the sheriff and arm the people and arm the militias, that dirty word, with the same like and kind weapons that the military has. You know, I've kind of changed my thought on that. Look at, they can give all the military weapons they want as long as they give them to the sheriff. How's that? Don't give them to the state police. Give them to the sheriff. You know, because the sheriff is under the control of the people. And if he's not, he doesn't. Guess what? You get rid of him. He's under the government. You can't do nothing with the state police. They're the governor's private police force. They're a corporate police force. And, I mean, they got some good guys. I know. I'm very friendly with many state troopers. And some of them went to school with my kids. And some of them are retired. And I've known them all my life, so I'm not casting aspersions on the police themselves, but they got to look at, they need constitutional forces. They got to understand that they're working
here,
for
here.
Entity. Guess that?
Hi.
Somebody say?
We must be related with some name here.
Oh, I guess that's just some feedback. But anyway, I'm going to shut up now. If anybody has anything to say, go ahead. We're taking all takers. Looks like we got about 30 people here. Anybody have any news, comments, quips, or anything to do with the main idea of this group?
Hello. Now, let me tell you what, Jordy, talk about being ready. I'll tell you a story. We had a captain's inspection aboard ship, and, you know, you spend half a day just cleaning up your space and this and that, and this captain got this one space, and the seaman walked up to him. Good morning, Captain. C-405L, ready for inspection, sir. And the captain's standing there, and he's pulling on his white gloves, and he says, hey, lad, I'll tell you if you are ready or not. But here's the thing. So there's somebody in higher above. Somebody higher above will know if we are ready or not. Now, last week, our young gals were in the apartment complex. They had a big row with the trash collectors, that company. And I went over there and I said, well, you know, they're organized crime. You don't want to mess with them. You'll wind up in the landfill, you know, joking around. But here's the thing. Corruption is so bad, they are into everything. Everybody, almost everybody has been affected one way or another by this out-of-control government. Economically, employment-wise, or whatever. Most everybody has been affected. Now we got a chance. Like I've been out running around doing errands. You look in people's eyes. They have hope. They are ready to go. And you know, whether you call it a committee of safety or whatever, how you can either make it formal or just totally lax and start off small. But this is the time for everybody to stand up and start solving problems county by county and start taking this country back. This is the time. And like I say, God or somebody, maybe St. Michael himself will tell us if we're ready or not, and they will tell us what to do. I yield.
Thank you, Ollie. I agree. Anybody else out there have anything? Just speak up. There's no cue. Just holler. I didn't put the cue on, so I won't unless it gets noisy. You guys are so quiet tonight. I'm not sure. You're like all sleeping.
I thought I'd wake somebody up. Evidently, I didn't.
Well, if nobody else has anything to say, I thought I'd bring up a book that I'm reading. It's called The Lost Hegemon, and it's written by a guy named F. William Engdahl, and he talks a lot about international events are basically going to force the hand of the United States, and the fact that all of these countries have been trying to establish gold-backed currencies. For example, that's supposedly one of the reasons why they brought Gaddafi down. But, you know, Chinese are also getting on that bandwagon, and I'm sure the Russians are too. So basically what's going to happen is the real gold and silver-backed money is going to run at, is going to destroy the dollar. And the fact that the Chinese have so much of our money, our debt, that if they dump that, then that's going to cause real problems for the United States, and they're not going to have the power that they think they have to affect world events.
Well, you know what? You're absolutely right, and this struggle's been going on a while now. Look at China, Russia, and the BRICS nations already have established a basket of currencies. And there is gold and silver backing in it. And the United States and Donald Trump need to get on with that. You know, early on we had talked to Karen Udies, and she said there was this currency, this woven currency with, you know, it's paper money. It's woven with gold in it. You can actually melt it and get the money out. I haven't heard anything about that except for the fact that there's a company that can produce this stuff, and I've heard rumors that there's some of this money that's around. I haven't heard of it coming in. But the main thing is that, you know, when it's time to do that, and look, at not only did they get rid of Gaddafi for doing that, Saddam Hussein was the same thing. Saddam Hussein, the only reason they got rid of him is he was not going to accept the fiat dollar anymore. And when he said that, that was his death warrant right there. And that's what they do to people that don't listen to the, you know, that don't get into the IMF loans and the fiat currency. So they're not going to look at. They don't want to let go. They want a cashless society. They want digital money. They already have it. You know, there's not enough money in existence right now. There's a cash shortage. You know.
Well, that's how they caused the you know, crashes before, is they shorten the money supply. So well, they're doing that with India.
Look at our money supply is so short right now. We can't. I mean, there will be no run on the bank. It's done. I mean, before it starts, it's done, because it's like there's very little money in existence as far as, you know, if everybody wants money.
And it's a creative situation, though. It's a creative situation.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Look, most of it is in digital money, and it can disappear in the blink of an eye, and they know that, and they like that because they control it, you know? So every depression, every downturn was them experimenting. They created it all. They're playing us, you know, like a string instrument here. But it's
we
up
know
to
that
us.
They just try to reap every bubble, you know, when they create the bubble and they bust it. But you mentioned Karen Hugis, and I wanted to say something serious on this note because I followed her closely for quite a while. I even talked to her on the phone. But she attacked us outright about a week ago, and I went right into full bore back against her because along with some letter from Linda, she just was laundry list and all this stuff that's just totally erroneous, saying that we skip over things and we haven't told our membership this and that. It's just horrible. But my main issues with her are, and these are the things that I tell her in public in front, you know, as I publish our conversations online, is we don't want her to keep beating on about changing our constitution under the current, kangaroo system. How do we think that since so many of these governors actually have felonies against them, they're all, you know, controlled by Masons and the pedophile entrapment, you know, blackmail network. I'm sorry, not all of them. I can't say that, but, you know, so many.
And the
ministers of finance around the world that she has all this confidence in, right? We're supposed to give it to the same people. And so she's been banging this drum about the gold conversion, but I think there's a poison pill in having the restricted asset-based system as well. And I don't understand economics well enough. But I do know that by triangulation, you know, I hate calling people out as shills all the time and stuff, but this is very carefully considered. Everybody who's at the top of learning, you know, what's really going on historically is completely dumped Karen. She's entangled with her husband, was all involved in the UN assets, you know, just counting every single resource so that they could manage it on the globe.
Well, I don't see any evidence of anything that she claims. And you know, when somebody says something about that gold,
bad feedback, guys.
Future
feedback, Harley.
Okay, I'm down.
Okay. Well, look at when somebody mentioned the gold currency, she threw a link up to the technology company that's producing it, but it had nothing to do with the stuff that she said was coming in. It's still nowhere. It's still not there. Instead, you know, she didn't show any evidence of where this is. I mean, I don't want to see the company that's making the technology. That's not what she said a year ago. You know what I'm saying? All of a sudden, now she's just throwing these links out. We know the technology exists. We know that they can weave gold to make it look like paper, and you can take it, you can melt it down, and it's all available. But there's nothing going on as far as the replacement of this. You know, and believe you me, they're going to fight real hard. Now, the trouble with Karen is she's lived a certain life. It's like people that are in politics. It's like bankers. It's like anybody else. They have no idea where the rubber meets the road, where you and I are, where everybody's at. You know, it's all nice to have these high ideals. But meanwhile, you know, you're scaring the people. What do you mean I'm scaring the people? We got sheriffs kicking people out of their houses. They're taking their mortgages illegally, and you're telling us that we're scaring them? Oh, well, relax. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain as they're dragging you out of your house. See, the committees of safety, oh, that's a radical thing. You know, you're gonna cause riots. You're going to cause this. You're going to cause that. No, our forefathers formed them as a safety net in order to assemble and make a plan in order to stand up to a government that was tyrannous. Now, this government is our government. It's in place. The Constitution, jury nullification, it's all there. And the only reason it's not working is there's only one reason, because we're not doing it. And now we have a guy on the top that's listening, and it's woe to us if we don't get in there and let our knowledge and desires be known to how to put this back. It's not as complicated as they're making it out to be. It's really not. I mean, they got all these derivatives that are going to crash, but you know what? What does that mean to you and me? That's international bankers. You know what? They can all go to hell. You and I and America and the factories and everything else, we're going to survive as long as we have the freedom to go out and do what we need to do to keep our communities going. Farmers need to farm, and mechanics need to mechanic, and they need to do it unfettered by government regulation. That's what's killing us. They got to have their fingers in everything we do, and they're stealing out of vengeance right now, because they see the writing on the wall. They know that they're at the end, and so we're in a very dangerous time right now, because they're trying to grab and get whatever they can while they can. And I don't you know, if anybody's going to get panicked here, I don't know that it's going to be the people. I think it's the politicians. I think George Soros and all those guys are stuffing their bags looking for a place to run, and I think that's what's going on. And you know what? If they would have allowed these companies that were too big to fail to fall, including GM, it would have been the law of the jungle. It would have been a wonderful thing. Because if GM would have fallen down, you got Pontiac, you got Chevrolet, you got all the GM brands, you know, GMC. What would have happened? Smaller companies would have come in and bought them up. We would have had all these car companies would have been separate again. Pontiac would be Pontiac again. You know what I mean? And they would have produced cars. It would have made more competition. It would have given us more choices. Prices would have come down. When a big dinosaur falls in the jungle, the little ones all come and eat it, and guess what? They all get fatter, don't they? And they all get healthier. And this business that, oh, we can't, they're going to lose jobs and stuff. Baloney. Those assets are still there. The factories are still there. The buildings are still there. Give the lower class people a chance to come in and bid on them and take them. And look at what did Obama do when GM got in trouble? He killed Saturn. Saturn was the best company that GM had. They were successful. They were doing a good business plan, and they were making money. And he killed them because he's evil, and he doesn't want anything that works. Why would you kill Saturn? And they were great little cars. I sold 18 used Saturns. None of them came back with problems. None of them. They don't rust. They got like plastic bodies. I mean, this is the government gets in something and they screw it all up. You know, I mean, we had Henry Ford made a complete car from the wheels, from the ground up, out of hemp, including the gasoline that was in the tank, which was made from hemp. And you know what? They don't want that. They don't want that because we can grow it here. We can make it here. It's renewable. It cleans the soil. It grows anywhere. It puts nitrogen back in the soil. They heal diseases with it. No, they want us on oil and coal, which is, it's not, look at oil and coal. You do it right, it's not a bad thing. You know what I mean? All this global warming is a bunch of bull crap. There's no global warming going on due to the cars running and all that. I know that. I know that because I watched Mount St. Helens blow up. I watched it on TV. And when it was all done, Dan Rather sat there and said, Mount St. Helens has just blown more hydrocarbons, more sulfur dioxides, more this, more that in the air than all the cars and all the factories and all this and all that since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. I said, that's nice. What are we spending $40 billion on catalytic converters when Mount St. Helens farts once and negates anything we ever thought we were doing? So I know it's a lie because we're not all dead yet. You know? So things are a lot better than you think they are, and it's the smoke and mirrors that they're giving us, the psyops that they're giving us, to hold us down and to keep us in fear. Their biggest weapon is fear. Fear, 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 fear. If we start in our communities talking to each other and making alliances and bartering and setting up business deals and doing things like burning hemp oil or even rapeseed oil, you can run diesels on it. There's a farmer running his whole place.
I'll be right
on the
there. I'll be there. I'll be in a few
hemp.
Minutes.
So. Look at nobody. You give America a free hand and you watch what Americans can do. We're the most motivated, innovating people on the planet. You watch. They just got to get off our backs. That's the whole trick of this. Forget Karen Cuties and the gold and all that. We don't need it. Because what we'll do is I'll deal in rice and beans if I have to. You know? All we got to do is get our heads out of the paradigm that they've given to us since the day we were in the crib, and that noise from the television was coming across, and they were programming us.
Greenwood.
You know. So here's where we're at. We're at that stage right now. We're at that juncture. If we make this, it'll be a 5,000 year leap into the future. And so, yeah, there's some argument against a complete gold currency, and I completely agree with that. You know, because they mandate a currency, but you see, gold is a problem because gold, if we did it with gold, then they could still control it. Only the rich would have it. You know what I mean? It has to be gold and silver, and it has to be more than that. It has to be what the local communities are willing to accept as money. There's Bitcoin, there's this, there's that. And we have to be versatile.
Working around is this very nefarious thing that they do of shortening the money supply to the point where they're not loaning to small businesses. They're not even revolving farmers, which used to be the most safe bet, right? Seasonal loans and stuff, you know, basic modest stuff. They purposely implode that stuff. Why? Because they want to cut the middle competition. So there's only the top and only the terribly desperate at the bottom who can't have two sticks to rub together, you know.
That's true. And you know what? Their MO never changes. So,
but we know it, so we can fight it, you know, and we
exactly.
can create our own wealth.
Who was it? Was it Jefferson that said, I know no other way to know where the lamp that lights my footstep other than the light of history? Because then there's nothing new under the sun, and so even this whole global currency thing. Look at it. Once they say gold is the mandatory backing, and Nikki just threw this note in my text and brought.
Oh, thank you. You saw it.
The light is. They turn around and they say, okay, we're gonna take all everything back in, and we're gonna reprint new notes. Look at last time they made a windfall profit by adjusting the price of gold and stuffing it all in their pockets, right? They bought it for whatever it was, I don't remember, less than $20 an ounce, and then they reintroduced it at 30 or 40 or whatever it was, and who got that profit? They did, and they're getting ready to do the same thing again. You see, they need an emergency. They need strife. They need the boogeyman. They need fear in order to accomplish what they're going to accomplish, and we cannot let them get away with this again. We should be very much smarter than that by now, and we are. I know we are. People are awake, and it doesn't even take everybody to be awake. If we could get 3 or 4% awake to know what's going on, and my goodness, Ollie's got his own virtual TV news station at his house. I would love to we put our own news out if we have to. You know what I mean? We don't need them anymore. We don't need them anymore, and that's why they're scared. They know where this is going. They know we have cures for cancer. They know that we can live so much better and so much longer. You know, look, they're killing us. What everything they do is designed to make us live short. They want you to live to be 65 years old or whatever and kick off and not get any of the money you put in Social Security. That's their goal. You know, and that's been working fine for the past 30, 40 years, but now they're getting even greedier than that. You know, before you know it, it's going to be like, I don't know if you ever saw that movie Logan's Run where there was a little disc in your hand started blinking. You were 30. It was time to jump into the replicator and kill yourself. That's what they want. That's their mindset.
The economic side, I was just watching a documentary piece about January last year, where the guy, I think, was a lawyer, and he was investigating how they do child support, alimony in other countries. And they've loaded up the system for the lawyer's benefit so much that they're forcing extra kids into the system, which is what they want. And now I'm going to talk about something that's more serious than your wallet, and that's our children. And I'm racking my brain with all this evidence out there. You know, we could walk into a police station and literally say, I want to report a crime. I want to conspiracy. There's evidence. And, you know, like we're a stone's throw from Albany, and, you know, that's the state capital of New York State, okay? And New York's police have that evidence from Pizzagate. And I just, you know, I know it's the third rail, but it sounds like someplace that NLA should go. And I just want to put it out there for people to pick their own brains and say.
Well, I know that they have that evidence, and you notice how strangely quiet it's become as of late. And it actually needs to be quiet in a certain sense. First of all, Donald Trump's not even in the presidency, and it's got nothing to do with him as far as his authority goes. Look, the FBI has it. The New York City police has it. If they knew what we knew, the New York City police should not be controlled by the FBI. This is a local case.
Correct. I mean,
yeah. And they absolutely have local authority more than the FBI does, and they should pursue it. Now, I read an article that said, oh, Comey shut them down and took all the evidence. I don't believe that. I don't know who the New York City, who's running things. They're all no good down there, though. I don't know who the commissioner is as of late. But anybody that would let Comey come in and take evidence has to be a complete idiot, because Comey's a complete idiot to begin with, and we all know that he's a puppet. You know, why would you give him all the evidence? And I don't believe that they did, and I do believe that they're going to go after the Clintons and the Bushes and all that. I do believe they're going to prosecute them. I do believe they're going to be on the run. But you know what? You have to be careful when that happens, because the ones that are chasing them are going to be the ones that put them in power to begin with. They're going to throw them under the bus in order to slip us something different. look at these guys. Look what they did to you. They always create the problem and then sell you the answer, don't they? This is more of the same crap. So we have to be very careful, because they're trying to create a vacuum. And in that vacuum, they will arrive. They'll come. It'll be like that little girl that goes, "They're back," you know, in that horror movie there when they come through the TV. I can't even remember what it was, but that's them. They're back. They haven't gone away. They're there.
Well, I want to put this in your ear about this situation with the courts. It also happens. There was an anecdote on Buzzsaw, and these three girls were missing from the care home, and the staff said that they were understaffed and they let them out. It was a high security thing, right? Took this woman a year to find her child who'd been trafficked, a 15-year-old girl.
By CPS.
And nobody was held accountable for the fact that those children weren't reported missing from care.
Yeah, imagine that.
You do the math on that. I mean, these judges and these people are Satanists, a lot of them. They're in the Masons. I'm sorry. They're making money hand over fist, and they're venally involved. And so I'm with you. It's quiet. It should be quiet. Let's see what the temperature is when Trump comes out. But I'm ready to come out blazing. I really don't care. My life isn't worth as much as the future of a bunch of kids' lives.
If once he's in there, we need to come out blazing, because we need to direct the dialogue. We can't listen to their rhetoric and their bullcrap. That's why it's so important for us to be organized in our communities. Because if you go into your local county and especially like New York City is a special case, but guess what? Those people, you think they aren't fed up with this baloney, with losing their children and having them trafficked? They should be able to handle that right down there with their own courts, with their own grand juries and their own prosecutors. And that's the way it should go down. They should take care of that locally, because it was done locally. I mean, I know that they went
it's
on.
It's not done locally. It's global.
I know it's
happening
global.
In every community.
And the global part of it, then that's where the federal government comes in.
Yeah. But I mean, I used to work at St. Cabrini Home, which is right across the river from Hyde Park. And, I mean, I didn't know anything when I worked at St. Cabrini Home. And I was really young. But I knew that these girls who are put there by the court system, they do an armed robbery, that your parents would put them on the street as prostitutes at age 9. So by the time they're coming to us at 12, these kids have been in the system for years. And what do? They run away and make money the way they know how to make money. or they find a pimp and the pimp would pick them up. So I didn't even understand as a 23-year-old early in my human services career how to protect the kids who were savvy. These kids are being stuck in CPS homes on PIMS petitions because the parents don't know what to do. So they're like, oh, let the state sort out my kids' bad behavior, don't know that they're sending the kids to foster homes where they may be trafficked out and sold to people, and they make a ton of money.
That's right. And look at that Caprini home. You don't think we could deal with that on a local level? And I mean, if it's international, then that's where the FBI comes in. When you have to reach across these state lines and across these country lines, we have the ability to do that. But it's not going to get done if the cry doesn't come from the local community.
Right.
And the answer has to come from the local community. You can't expect, and a lot of this is not even the government's fault in a certain sense, because the whole reason they ruin the morals of a country is for this reason. Because when you have parents that aren't giving their kids any moral values, and then they're out there in the streets and they have no respect and they're doing whatever they want to do, and they got drugs and all this crazy and prostitution and all this stuff going on, then the state comes in and they attempt to do it. You got a kid, he's coming to school, he's got problems. There's things going on in the home, and so now the state is going to take
care of it.
The state can't replace a real set of parents, a mother and a father, but they're going to do whatever they have to do in order to take care of the problem. You got a disciplinary problem in school, they're going to deal with it the way the state deals with it, which is never, never, never going to be as good as a true family can take care of it. So we have to ask ourselves, you know, how do we rebuild the family? How do we bring families back together again? How do we put those morals back in there? And that's because the state is an institution. It's not going to mother these kids. It's not going to nurture them. They can do a job. Don't get me wrong. They can do somewhat of a job, you know, but then you end up with like what Hitler had, you know what I mean, with his youth corps, all these beautiful looking blonde hair, blue eyed kids with their salutes. We don't want that either, right? We don't turn them into a bunch of robots. That's what the state does. That's how they nurture, you know?
Well, the statistic a year ago, Gerard, the statistic, and we have the most single parents in the world, America does, and the statistic was 3 out of 10. In America. That was a year ago, and we've had a year of economic crap down our heads since then. So you know a lot of more families have crashed. Just economically, you know, the problems start to set in. You know, you've got alienation with the fathers because they've got these huge orders, sometimes more than they even make. They're arbitrary and pernicious.
Oh, it's crazy, crazy what they want these guys to do. It's ridiculous. They jump off a bridge.
They take their license, they put them in jail, and they take their professional licenses in many cases, and then you've disabled the whole, you know, you just kill the goose. You just pluck the goose too fast.
Yeah, that's a hell of a solution, isn't it? Well, you didn't pay your child support, we're gonna take your car away. Oh, that should help. Stupid asses. Oh, you can't drive. Oh, no kidding. I can't work either. I can't drive.
But you're right. We need to work locally. And to do that, the action item is affidavits from victims. Period.
And that's what's gonna empower the top. Because they're not going to stand up to the this tidal wave of affidavits that NLA is going to put in the court. And they're going to need to – and see, it's going to be up to us to make them answer those. If for every crime – there's a remedy, then that's where we're starting, right there. And the thing is we don't need to do all of them. We just need to do a few of them. Because once they see this is how it's done. This is what our job is. This is what you do. This is how you go in. This is how you address it. You know, and we won't have all the answers, but the community needs to work the answers out amongst themselves, you know? I mean, let them take an example from something that is working in their community, you know? And there are groups that are having, you know, that do good things that can be patterned offered of and taken lessons from, you know.
Well, it needs to be reformed, and you need to look at other successful parts of the world and how they treat family situations. And again, take the money out, and you're not going to get away with that at the mercy of the bar.
Well, that's the problem, because they've created this monster.
But I would look for, even in existing, any protocol that wasn't followed and who was responsible to do that properly. That's how I got my weaponry back. I was saying, you guys were supposed to catalog this stuff. You were supposed to know where it was. Now I don't know if the movers have it and if I need to report it stolen, and you didn't follow protocol. And so that's the first indication that there's fraud going on. So, you know, people have to nitpick and find ways to get in and open these cases. And you're right, they will start to self-discipline themselves eventually.
Well, like you said, look, it comes down to, well, how come those girls weren't reported missing? I don't care if they were street smart. It makes no difference. Somebody had a job to watch them, and they didn't watch them.
Right.
Right? That's the first way. I mean, regardless of what happened or where they ended up, the first step was letting them get such a head start out in the street with nobody knowing.
But it's a very quick, slippery slope from negligence to larceny. It's on purpose.
Yeah, well.
Who's kidding who?
That's the ugly side of the coin, you know what I mean? Who pays
you get
who
in
to do
you
it?
Get in. You find that technicality, but I yield.
Well, yeah, hey, a quick note. We don't need to look at other countries. We just need to look back in our past. We had families that ran great. And it's before the government got in and meddled with us. We were a Christian-based society with Christian values. That's all we got to get back to. Those lamps you were talking about, Gerard, that Jefferson talked about?
Yep.
We can just look at the past. We don't need to go to any other country. We were the best by far and can be again. That's just a quick note on the family unit.
And we have examples that are working right here. But you see, we have a managed news media that will not talk about that because it cuts into their crime syndicates. There's things that are working here, and we need to find them and use them, and then we need to talk about them and advertise them. And like you said, they're Christian values. That's what they are. You know, I don't care whether you agree with it or you don't agree with it. We know what works. We know what used to work, right? So that's what you get back to. Anyway, so look, we know what the problems are. Now we have to get the solutions. And you're right. I mean, look, do we have to get creative? Yeah, as creative as what? Creative as what Eric just said, getting back to what we used to have, you know? I mean, that's just, you see, the advantage we have is what our forefathers didn't have. We already have this thing established. All we have to do is water it and pull the weeds out. It's not like we're ripping the trees out and starting a new garden like they had to start. They had to start from scratch. They had to put the whole infrastructure in, and they had to think it out. And, of course, while they were doing that, the enemy had his fingers in there, and he never let go. And, he went along nice with them long enough to get his foot in the door, and he never got out of the door. He went in and shut the door behind him. So we're all set up. What we need to do is get back to where we used to be. And that should be easier than it was, you know, starting from scratch. And I'm afraid, you know, with like Darren says, with this Article 5 convention, the people are not educated enough, are not ready to rewrite the Constitution. I can't imagine the mess that we would get if we tried to do that today without a whole lot of vetting and a whole lot of examination before we did it. I mean, I'm not saying we don't need to do it, because we do. However, we got to make sure that there's not a whole bunch of lawyers and government officials and bankers and all this other stuff in there with their fingers in there, just like they were in there when our forefathers did this the first time. Look, at this time here, we got to have all that out of there when we do it. And that's going to be up to us to educate the people. I mean, part of it is education. And I think one of the biggest places to educate public officials is in the courts. You know, if we could straighten the courts out and bring some justice back into the courts, that would filter down into the communities. You know, I went
to
court over. Yeah.
One quick question while you're on the Constitutional Convention. Chris Anhalt did a whole show on it, and I don't know if you know, but the Congress has put some kind of bill in there so that it's really a catch-22. If they get into it, then they have a specific group of congressmen that will only be allowed to do certain things in it, and it just sounded like they really, really have toyed with the whole idea behind it. I mean, when I got done listening to that, I was like, boy, the last thing we need to do is get into a constitutional convention again.
She's against the convention, is she not?
Absolutely not. No way does she say that we are ever capable of changing it from the viewpoint that I heard on her thing. That's all. I just
yelled.
I
agree with her. This country is not. We'd be foolish to open that door.
But they literally have changed some law or some statute so that it was like insiders only after. And I don't remember when she said they did it, but it was like in the 70s.
Yeah, well, guess what? That's our job to make sure that that goes back to the way it's supposed to be before we ever even consider that.
Right. Anyway, yeah. I yield.
And I think, you know, I think part of it, every state, like in New York State, it comes up, you can put a constitutional convention on the ballot, you know, and get a vote, and it can come up at any time. But every 17 years, I think it is, it comes up anyway, automatically. And what happens is they always – it never gets voted in because there's too much baloney going on, so the status quo moves forward. If we could fix our states first, if we could straighten out this business of who gets to be delegates at a state constitution convention, and that's what Bob Schultz is doing here for New York State right now. He's trying to get the legislation passed that makes anybody that gets any kind of government money recused from that whole process. Because how can you put somebody in a convention that's going to rewrite our state constitution that's going to write in their own paychecks? It's a conflict. It's an absolute conflict. Same thing with elected officials. You can't have them there. It's just it's ridiculous. So I think every state has somewhat of a problem in their constitution. So, well, New York has a lot of problems. We got some good stuff too, but we got a lot of problems. We got a lot of holes. And if we could fix the state constitution through a constitutional convention and do it right, then that would set the stage finally to fix the national constitution. But I don't think we should ever attempt it until we fix our states. Do you agree? I mean, it seems logical to me that, you know, every state had to conform to the national constitution before they could get into the United States. And there was a lot of bickering and rewriting to that effect. And when everybody did finally conform, they came in. Well, the opposite is true. So now let's let our states become more constitutional, fix their constitutions, and then we'll go in and fix the federal constitution after everybody knows what the hell they're doing. And right now we don't have the ability, the knowledge, or the wherewithal to come up with a national constitution that's anything better than what we have. Excuse me. But anyway, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we in Washington State have another problem. We actually have two constitutions. The original one that the people did was sent to Washington, D.C. and never put into the record. Then a bunch of the bigwig business owners got together a few years later and did a constitution, and that's the one that we have today. So there's
and
been
so
a movement.
That's why
here.
I say, why would you do a national one before you even fixed your own?
Right.
I mean, your priority is to get the real constitution, the one that the people originally voted on. You got to go through all that before you could ever think about doing the national one.
Absolutely. Oh, I tell everybody, you do not want an Article 5 or a CONCON or anything.
No, no.
I yield.
It's a Trojan horse is what it is. It really is.
It is.
Yep. And I think we all here know that. Yeah, who's that?
Hey, it's Jefferson in Missouri.
Hey, how you doing?
I got a question for you about the case in the federal court in New York. How long do these saboteurs have to respond to the paperwork? And once they have responded, if they respond in the wrong way, how are you going to push the issue? Or how are we, the people, going to push the issue?
Well, there are provisions for, you know, responses in the court. In other words, the court rules the traditional response times. That's what we're going to stick to. What was always there. We have an ability as the people coming in to do things our way. You know, we can bend the rules. I mean, look, they got court rules. Some of them we don't like. They are against fundamental principles, and we tell them that. We say we're not going to follow this one. And so I'm not exactly sure how we're going to move forward, but we're going to move forward with a consensus of the tribunal. In other words, first thing I think they're going to do, and I was talking to John about this, and this is something he said. He said, oh, they're going to turn around and try to pull a pre-trial hearing, like, to try to throw us out. He said, that's our first battle. It's like,
so maybe they have 60 days to respond. I mean, do they have a time limit? Can they just drag this out forever?
No. They have a certain time limit to respond. Now, as far as what our enforcement is, that's something else that we need to be working on behind the scenes here. And there are things that are going to need to be done. But the encouraging thing is that we do have this president up there that is sympathetic to the Constitution. So therefore, we can go through with fundamental principles in American jurisprudence and push that through the way it's supposed to be. You know what I mean? If we had nobody on the top raising their head in our corner, it would be much harder, because that creates a revolution, and we want a peaceful revolution. In order to have a peaceful revolution, what we have to have is we have to have people on the top awakening along with the people on the bottom, because, look, we know that there's people out there that can give us enforcement. We know they're there, and we know that their heads have been down, and we know why their heads have been down, and we're sympathetic to this plight, because if they pick their heads up and they don't have the people behind them, it's suicide for them, political and personal. So what's happened is it looks like we've turned the corner with that we actually have those people now have the support of the people on the bottom coming up, and they're willing to do things. I mean, there's people, judges and certain people in law enforcement that have had enough, and we don't need all of them. We just need a few of them. And that's what we're hoping for, that we get a consensus for the tribunal. You know what I mean? That even if it's a special prosecution or whatever you want to call it, but it's going to be supported from the top, the bottom, the middle, the sides, and it's going to march forward. And that's what has to happen. And so right now it's a tenacious tap dance, and we're sending them stuff. What we're doing right now is we're setting up the lines of the battle. In other words, the last couple things we sent them were the parameters that we're going to operate under. And believe me, if Trump wasn't in there and we didn't have some of these flag officers of the military that are sympathetic and they do understand the Constitution, I don't know if we'd have a snowball chances in hell. But we do now. And that's why I feel encouraged, because we have enough pressure coming from the top and the bottom that I think it's going to fly now, you know?
So maybe Trump has acknowledged the paperwork?
Well, I don't want to speak out.
Maybe not him directly, but someone in his cabinet.
Well, I know that he's received it. You know what I mean? I know that he's seen it. I know that, you know, some of the original stuff that we sent him, that they liked it. I heard a rumor that they even took it and put it in book form and handed it out to his whatever team it was that's going to handle it. They actually bound it and handed it out. That's pretty encouraging. That they took
okay, well, I thank you for your answer, Gerard. I'm going to yield. I'm trying to get over this chemtrail flu.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. I mean, we got a lot of problems to solve, don't we? But you know what? They can all go away in a day, can't they?
I guess they sure can.
They can. And that's the day that we start getting better, you know, when we stop these planes from flying around and all
start
that.
Start our healing process.
Exactly.
Hey, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, you're welcome.
How you doing?
Who's that?
This
good.
Is Crystal.
That's Crystal. I recognize you from a distance. Crystal.
How are you?
Good.
I go back to court next Thursday, and I'm trying to get the team together. They didn't want to tell me my court date because they want to settle my case without me. So the
it's in rem, Crystal. It's called in rem. That's the game they're playing.
In rem?
That's right. They're doing it in rem, which is out at sea.
Okay.
That means they don't require you being noticed. They're treating you like a pirate ship that they captured.
Well, anyways, I called them because now they were bouncing me. My so-called attorney told me to speak to the trustee attorney. But when I filed for the bankruptcy, what I did, I put everyone down, and all their cases were discharged. So put the script back on them. You know?
You're a thorn. You're a thorn. You know,
really?
In their side. You're really a thorn in their side.
So last week when I asked him, I said, when is the date and time? He goes, I'll get back to you. So I called like twice this week. So I finally got the date. It's next Thursday. I said, please send me a letter. You know? And so he goes, yeah, we'll send one out to you. He goes, but you really don't have to be there. I said, it's my case. I insist on being there. You know?
Who's telling you this? Your lawyer?
Yeah. But see, they go up on the sixth floor, and it's nothing but all attorneys, and all the courtrooms are open, and you know where it has where jury? Well, they walk right back to the judge, the attorneys. It's like a good old boys party that they're having up there. And there's no clients. You know,
well, maybe you could publicize when these things go on, and maybe what we could do is put a rumor out that there's a team coming to arrest them all, and maybe nobody will show up that day. need to be arrested, all of them.
This is great. I mean, really, everybody, we couldn't believe it. You got one floor where they're taking everybody's property, everybody's so stressed to the guilt. And then this other, but you go up there, and there's nothing but all attorneys,
they're shooting the lots on the cloak to see who gets your clothes that they ripped off your body.
Mm.
You know, they're crucifying you, and they're playing dice to see who gets what. That's what's going on. Down there, they're stripping you of everything, and up there, they're dividing it up amongst themselves.
Yeah, and then the trustee attorney for the bankruptcy, he goes, well, do you have an attorney? I said, why would I need an attorney when my house is paid for? I sent you the proof. He goes, well, I didn't understand. I said, wait, excuse me? I said, you're an attorney, and I sent you all the documents from the clerk's office with the volume and page, and you do know what that is, you know? And as a matter of fact, one of the other attorneys put a lien on my property. I said, do I need to file criminal charges because you're perpetrating a fraud? You just put a lien on my property. He goes, oh, no, we're removing it. So they sent me my release slip on Monday.
You're like Columbo in there. I can see it now. Oh, no, we're taking it off right now.
Yeah, so they sent me my release on Monday.
Oh, my goodness gracious. You got to be the biggest burr under their saddle. I can't believe it. You just go in there with a nice little demeanor and have them removing liens.
Yeah, so it's awesome. I got to go tomorrow, hopefully. Yeah, I got to get up early so I can go get the new copy of my new deed slip.
Well, and look, we should all say a prayer that you prevail with all your efforts. You've certainly fought the good fight here, and it's about time you won. You know.
Yeah. Did you receive that affidavit paper too, right? Was it?
I assume so. I don't get that stuff. That stuff goes into.
But there was an affidavit paper that we filed, and I had filed it in the town clerk's office. And with that paper there, I got my own vitamin page.
There you go.
And so, yeah, I thought we sent it to John.
No, I'm sure you did. I what I'm saying is I wouldn't have seen it, though.
Oh, okay.
Goodness, don't send me any paperwork. My goodness, you don't know how I am.
Oh. No, but it's something good for everybody to file, you know.
True.
Because what they've been, as they said, they've been perpetrating that fraud. And, again, it's just like when I asked them, I said, well, I would like to see the volume and page. And when I took a loan out, and I'd like to see the signature. And, now, my attorney told me, well, you don't have to worry about him because he's in Florida. Oh, really? You know?
Look, the most important part is the grantor and the grantee. Never mind the warranty deed and all this other baloney. It's the grantor and the grantee.
The grantee.
And accept the deed. You see, they don't want to talk about that. And they want to leave that. They want to make sure that that's blank so that when the time comes, they can put their name in there and steal your equity, steal your property. They have such fraud going on. It's unbelievable. And it's, you know what? It's really not that complicated. It's just layered with all kinds of other baloney to confuse you,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that's what they do. It's all
can I ask Crystal a question?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, it's Captain John. Crystal, am I to understand your... in bankruptcy, do you have a bankruptcy filing?
Yes, I did file bankruptcy.
All right. Let me throw something at you here. I don't want to digress too much, and I'm not going to explain this too much, but you're probably going to understand what I say. You can put all of this to an end relatively quickly. The idea is to deposit your certificate of live birth in the asset column of your bankruptcy filing. But there's one caveat. You have to take the birth number on your certificate of live birth and
my
get
birth
the
bond number. That's my
and
birth
get
number.
The
yes.
CUSIP number that is attached to your certificate of live birth. You must have that CUSIP number, which you can pay to get from a broker. They could look it up in 10 seconds.
I got my birth bond number.
That's not what I asked. Do you have the CUSIP number attached to your certificate of live birth?
Is the CUSIP number on the live birth bond?
The CUSIP number is what is required for them to bond your certificate of live birth. I don't want the bond number. I want the CUSIP number.
I never heard of the
taken
CUSIP.
Trust me, I want to go with this because you're going to freaking love it.
Mm-hmm.
You get your birth number off of the front of your certificate of live birth. It's always on the top. You know what that is. It says birth number. And you give that to the broker, and the broker gets the CUSIP number. Nothing moves in the financial world without the CUSIP number. It always starts with the CUSIP number. And you got the original CUSIP number for your certificate of live birth and your certificate of live birth, and you file that in the assets of your bankruptcy filing. And here's the magic. You've heard about the Sesta K Trust. You've heard about the tens and the hundreds of millions of dollars in there. You've heard about all kinds of idiots that think they're going to tap into it and they're going to do A for V and all that other crap. Well, guess what? The first thing that's going to happen on many an occasion is the bankruptcy trustee resigns from the case and runs out the door. When the second trustee comes in, the judge reads in the Riot Act and says that the federal judge knows what I just told you to do, because that is going right back to the 1933 Federal Bankruptcy Act, House Joint Resolution 192, where they have to pay all our debts. They know how much. See, it's their money in that trust account. It has nothing to do with us. Yeah, they're using our name, blah, 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 but it's their money. And when you put that certificate of live birth in there, they know it's worth tens and hundreds of millions of dollars. It pays off every freaking thing in your bankruptcy. And the judge will tell that second trustee that you better dot your I's, you better cross your T's, and you better get it right, because if he doesn't, the federal judge is liable. and I guarantee you that it will all go away. Period. End of story. It's just that simple.
Wait a minute.
How do you like that?
How do you spell CUSIP? That sounds great.
CUSIP. CUSIP. It's an identifier. I forget what it stands for. Commercial.
CUSIP.
Yep. CUSIP number.
And you got to go to a broker to get that.
Well, if you have a friend, it would be nice. But any broker, I don't care if they do stocks, bonds, commodities, futures. I don't care who they are. If you're in the system, you can go to Fidelity.com, give them the birth number, and bop, comes your CUSIP number. And with that CUSIP number, you can go and find out who has the bonds and how much they're worth. The CUSIP number comes before the bonds. It's always about the CUSIP number. So you get the birth certificate number, then you get the CUSIP number, and with the CUSIP number and the certificate of live birth, you file that as an asset, and it all goes away because they know it's worth tens and hundreds of millions of dollars. And it's all in-house. The beauty is you don't have to do a damn thing. They all have to deal with it now.
So what about when they come after you for land tax, if they're going to pay all of our debts?
Is your land tax part of the bankruptcy? No. Taxes are not part of a bankruptcy filing. It's a separate issue.
Okay, I see.
Because my house is paid for, right. And okay.
But I'm just telling you, you can get this off your back and let the chickens run around with the fox in the hen house and take care of it yourself. And it's just that simple. It's just okay.
And
that
I have to get
simple.
the CUSIP bond from?
The CUSIP number.
The CUSIP number.
From a broker.
Right. In other words, you give them the birth bond number, and they look up the CUSIP number, and you attach that
it's
number.
It's not a bond number. It's your birth number. Learn the terms.
Number.
Be very specifically careful about what we're talking about.
Birth.
The birth number is always on the top right-hand side of your certificate of live birth.
Yeah, because I,
your
just,
birth
I
number.
Just... I just got my birth bond number from Hartford. I pay $50 for it or whatever.
Well, you got to back
and
up.
And there's five numbers. There's five numbers on top.
I don't know what you mean by birth bond number. I do not understand that term. I'm saying is that you have to have a CUSIP number before you get any kind of bond. So by virtue of what you are telling me, you got to go backwards. Go back to that broker and ask that broker. You're talking about this birth bond, which I don't understand, and back it up. And what's the CUSIP number that created that bond? You cannot have a bond without a CUSIP number, period.
Well, man, that sounds to me like she got the CUSIP numbers. In other words,
that's what I'm thinking. It might be there somewhere. That's what I'm saying.
Hold on one second. Let me just check it right quick.
You gave them your birth number, and Fidelity gave you back this number.
There's a CUSIP number on the back of your Social Security card. That's a CUSIP number.
Oh.
It's an identification number. It's a file number. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tracking number. But you cannot go anywhere in securitization. You can't have a bond unless it's securitized. You can't securitize without the CUSIP number.
Right.
So anyway, I don't want to get too much into this because the process is get the damn CUSIP number and a certificate of live birth and file it in the asset column. And watch the explosion. Now, because we're talking about CUSIP numbers, I'm going to take you down a path that's going to blow you away. And this is all about CUSIP numbers. Has anybody ever filled out an application of any kind? Yes?
Yeah.
Everybody has. Job applications and specific loan applications, mortgage applications, whatever. Every time you sign an application, as in for a job. You go to IBM and you sign that application for a job. They take that frickin' application with your signature on it. They give it a CUSIP number. They securitize it and they sell it as a bond on the market.
Oh, my God.
You know that.
You got to be kidding.
CUSIP numbers are very important. Very important. This is the world of CUSIP numbers. That's why when I do a debt validation letter, I'm asking for everything. I want to know, do you have my, and then you get into hypothecation with derivatives, patents, copyrights, and copyright derivatives. So
right.
Now you filled out this job application, and it's a patent because that form that you filled out at IBM, they have a patent on that form, and that gives them the right to copyright it. And then they make a copy, they make a Xerox of that and change a word, and that's a copyright derivative. And now they're selling those with CUSIP numbers on the bond market. So when I ask for a debt validation letter, I ask for the original application, any iterations of the application since then. I want all the CUSIP numbers that were used, every bond or security that was sold under that CUSIP number, and every patent, copyright, and copyright derivative attached to any of that.
See, I think my CUSIP number is this five-digit number on top. I got
I don't remember exactly, but it's not a five-digit number. It's more
is
than
it five numbers? It's a number, then it's a dash, then it's two numbers, then it's a dash, and then there's more numbers.
No, I'd have to – somebody pull out their Social Security card and flip it on the back. And
okay,
count
I got
numbers.
My Social Security card here, too. No.
Flip it over. It's all in red on the back of your Social Security card. That's a CUSIP number. How many digits are in that?
Wait a minute.
That is a CUSIP number.
So these guys are playing board games here.
You have no. I'm just expanding your. I'm just expanding your world of fraud understanding. You thought it was
okay,
bad.
All right. All right. Here it goes. Oh.
Oh.
There is numbers. On my back of my Social Security card.
Of course it is. That's a CUSIP number, huh?
That's
how many
okay,
digits?
It's all in red.
Don't read it out
okay.
over here.
No, no,
God
no.
God forbid,
no.
don't read it over here.
Okay. Okay. It's there's a letter, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 numbers.
Okay, that's a CUSIP number.
So all she's got
to
do
what
is
you need.
That to the birth certificate and put it in the asset column of the bankruptcy.
And they go nuts. Because they know all this crap that we've heard about the fraud of our Susticate Trust, your birth certificate, bond, your strata, whatever the hell term you like, is there. But it doesn't, the money doesn't belong to us. That's a fallacy. But the money is very real to them.
They're making money out of thin air on warm bodies. They just need a warm body to sign the form, and they're patenting the forms even so they're their own, right?
Oh my God.
And so it's their fraud, and they know what they know their fraud, and they know what that certificate of live birth is with the correct CUSIP number, and it's a done deal.
So
your account that they have in your name is worth tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't need to know your personal business, but I'm going to say your bankruptcy is for less than $5 million.
No, don't please.
So your certificate of live birth has got it covered. It's my point.
Anyway, I think we should end the recording here. We're getting on here way out.
Do me a favor. Can I get your number?
I'll give you my email address. Decape, at hotmail.com.
Hotmail.com.
Yep.
Okay. Alrighty. Okay, I will get my phone number over to you. Can you call me back?
I can.
Okay.
Will you repeat the number, please?
I'm sorry?
You mean the email, the decape at hotmail.com?
You said decakape.hotmail.com.
No, at hotmail.com, right.
Correct.
Oh, at those, okay.
He was a sailor, I take it.
Hey, decape is the young and stupid guys on sailboats that we raised that works forward of the mast. Us old salts, we're in the back driving the boat and calling the shots.
All right, so it's D-E-C-K at hotmail.com.
Deck 8.
D-E-C-K 8. 8. 8.
Deck A?
Delta, Echo, Sierra.
As like a gorilla pony of eight.
That's right.
Hey, what's a swab jockey?
Okay.
I don't know. That's sounds like one of you idiots in the Navy that still thinks they're sailors in the Navy.
No, this is great. So great.
Well, you got Ollie laughing.
Hey, listen, I love the Navy, but there ain't no sailors in the Navy. They're all power boaters. They're all stink potters.
Oh,
does that number ever change?
What's that?
Yeah,
what
number? They're different numbers.
The QSIP number?
Yep.
Well.
Yep.
Anyway, we'll talk more on the phone, but everybody's
okay.
Got a general introduction to a QSIP number. Nothing
right.
Moves. There's no security. You have to have a QSIP number in order to securitize. And then when you securitize, you can make a bond or annuity or an insurance policy, whatever the hell you want. But nothing moves without a QSIP number.
So the birth certificate was a birth certificate until they put a QSIP number and bonded it then.
No, that's basically the deal.
Well,
that's how it works. That's the mechanics of finance.
Thanks.
Right.
Thanks for the info. Thank you.
Well, we learned a lot there. That was great.
But like I said,
okay.
Throw that in your acid column and watch them go nuts.
Yeah, I throw that in what column?
Asset. You in your filing, you had debits, the debt you owed all the people, your credit card, blah, blah, blah. Then you have your assets, your house, your jewelry, your car, whatever. You put it in the asset side, and they will freak the hell out. Very few people know this, and everyone I know that's done this has done it successfully. It's just
okay.
That simple. Just make sure you have the QSIP number and you have the certificate of live birth. You put it in the case file under the asset section. It's just that simple. It's not very complicated. It's a pain in the ass to get the QSIP number, but other than that, it's pretty cool.
Okay.
This is real power.
Okay, and I get that from a stockbroker.
Any broker. Stocks, bonds. It doesn't matter. Anybody hooked into it. You know, basically, you get it from Fidelity.com, but you just have to have a password and a username to get into Fidelity.com. That's where it is.
See, they're the ones who stole my pension, Fidelity.
Yeah. I don't want to get into a side discussion. I'm just telling you where the broker goes. You ask the broker for your QSIP number. He goes, tap, tap, tap. Here's your QSIP number. He went to Fidelity to get it. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, okay.
Okay, anybody have anything else before we sign off here?
Well, I wanted to end this on a good news note. Our Committee of Safety in Oconee County, Wisconsin, had a court win going back a week. The gentleman joined the Committee of Safety, and he learned from Bob and Wendy, and he went to court, and he did extremely well. And it's because of his joining the Committee of Safety and what he learned from the Committee of Safety. So we have a win.
Oh, that's
very good. That's nice.
Yeah, because I'm getting my people together for next week. So, you know, and I'm trying to work with the education to get these some of the parents and get the high school students there, too, and see if we can get that a part of our class, you know, for their curriculum and work experience.
Yep, very good, Crystal. Let us know how you make out.
Okay.
Somebody else wanted to say something there a minute ago.
Yeah, is this call recorded?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and then does this work for the IRS, too?
Oh, it does?
You better be careful here.
does it?
I'm not going to comment on anything other than the bankruptcy.
Okay, that's all I need
to
know.
Death and taxes are going to live forever, right?
Even I ain't stupid enough to talk about that on an open.
Oh, but I did tell you one other thing before I forget. If you are disabled and you file for tax return, under a certain amount, you don't have to pay any taxes and you get a refund back. But they only allow you to go back 3 years. I said, well, wait a minute. I've been disabled for 10 years. They said, I can't go back. I said, but if I owed you for 10 years, I have to pay you. But I only can get back 3 years. So that was good news. Yeah.
You're playing their game, and that's all I got to say about that.
I haven't paid in 4 years, so there you go.
Okay. Yeah, you got it.
Well, no, they took, but I'm getting a refund because I should have never paid it. Huh?
Now I understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
So
whatever
when
they owed you in the first place, you gave. Okay. Believe me, you gave them a lot more than you'll ever get.
Well, absolutely. Well, I do. Okay.
Okay, so if everybody's done, I'm going to shut the recording, and we'll meet you here same time, same bat station next week.
Okay.
Have a good night, everybody. Thanks
you
for
too.
Coming.
Good night, everybody.
All right. Good night.
Bye.
That fluttery sound in the background is everybody digging through their billfold to look at their Social Security numbers.
What was that noise?
Thank you, Charles.
Okay.
Yeah, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Kiss my Cusip.